Before my mother grew sick of my father's abuse and alcoholism and filed for divorce, we'd lived a lot like the Kronks, holed up in drafty cabins we couldn't afford to heat, and wearing secondhand clothing scavenged from boxes in church basements. Just that week, I'd seen Amy Kronk at the supermarket in Machias paying for her groceries with one of those EBT food stamp cards. And I suspected that Billy might still occasionally poach some deer for the freezer. He and I had our own don't ask, don't tell policy. It had taken him 6 months to land another job after Joe Brogan fired him. "How's work going?" I asked as we stood over the sizzling grill, turning venison hamburgers. "It's different." I rubbed my newly barbered crew cut. "What do you mean?" He lowered his voice so Amy wouldn't hear. "Yesterday, Mrs. Morse made me open a package that came in the mail. She thought it might be a pipe bomb or something. I told her we should dip it in the bathtub first, just to be safe."
"What was inside?"
"An old book a friend bought at some auction, paintings of birds by that guy Audubon. It got kind of waterlogged. Mrs. Morse threatened to deduct the cost from my paycheck. She pretended she was joking, but you could never tell with her." I swatted a no-see-um that had alighted behind my ear. "She didn't recognize her friend's handwriting on the package?" "Mrs. Morse said it looked suspicious." "I can't say I blame her for being paranoid." Elizabeth Betty Morse had built a log mansion on 6th Machias Lake, on a pine-shaded point where a historic sporting camp had stood for more than a century. And now she required a considerable domestic staff to help run the property. I'm not sure what Billy's official job title was, but he seemed to function as her personal driver, handyman, and forester, his duties dictated by the needs of the day. Increasingly, he also served as her bodyguard. Betty Morse needed guarding. She was a former hippie who had started a small business selling dried herbs at farmers' markets. In time, she hired some local women to help produce various types of organic teas, which she peddled to natural food stores, first in Maine and then around the country. Eventually, she opened a factory somewhere out of state, down south, I think, and began manufacturing herbal health supplements. These pills won the endorsement of Hollywood celebrities, who in turn made the brand a hit with a nation of dieting housewives. When Earth Mother Inc. went public, the Wall Street Journal said Betty Morse netted $500 million. She gave some of the money to animal rights groups and used another chunk to purchase 100,000 acres of Down East timberland, which she'd promptly declared off-limits to loggers, hunters, all-terrain vehicle riders, fishermen, and snowmobilers. Her intention, she announced, was to donate the land to the federal government to create a new national park where timber wolves and woodland caribou would once again roam free. The idea hadn't gone over well with my neighbors, many of whom were employed by the woods products industry and didn't know where to ride their ATVs or shoot their AR-15s now that Queen Elizabeth had cordoned off half of Washington County. Morse told them not to worry. She promised a sunny economic future in which they would sell goods and services to crowds of tourists eager to experience a brand new wilderness within a day's drive of Boston. Her de facto subjects greeted this promise with skepticism, to say the least. I was doing my best to withhold judgment on the idea, but it wasn't easy staying out of the arguments. Elizabeth Morse was the number one topic at every dinner and bait shop I visited that fall. The number two topic was the weird October heat. No one in Maine could remember an autumn this insufferable. Johnny jump-ups were jumping up for the third time outside the Washington County Courthouse, and the persistence of mosquitoes in the woods behind my cabin seemed less like an annoyance and more like an ominous disruption in the natural order of things. Frustrated moose hunters blamed the 70-degree heat for the refusal of the big bulls to leave the coolness of the peat bogs and move to the upland clear-cuts, where they could be dispatched, illegally, from the backs of pickup trucks. Even the old cranks down at Day's General Store muttered the words global warming without their usual sneers. Every day, going on patrol in my shirt sleeves and orange hunting vest, I experienced a sense of temporal dislocation. The foliage was fading in the treetops, and yet the sun continued to blaze like a frying pan left too long on the stove. Sooner or later, I knew, we would pay a price for this never-ending Indian summer. So, when Billy Kronk called to say that he'd stumbled on something bad on the Morse property, I figured the bill might finally have come due.
"It's bad, Mike," he told me in a quavering voice I'd never heard from him before. "Wicked bad."
But what I found on Betty Morse's estate was more than bad. It was evil.